The Magnificent Seven, they were known as. Kensal Green, Norwood, Abney Park, Brompton, Tower Hamlets, Nunhead, and most famous of all, Highgate Cemetery. Welcome to the Victorian Valhalla. Ooh, these gates will be the death of me. Through these heavy cast iron gates are passed the mortal remains of more than 160,000 souls, all on their final journey to the cold ground of the hillside beyond. There, they lie at rest in the 51,800 graves which my father, his father, and his father before dug for them. Come in, come in. I'm in here, in the chapel. Hold on, I'll just turn the radio off. I'm fixing up these old coffin rests. Well, you have to be a jack of all trades as a sexton, you know. It's not simply a job of opening up in the morning and digging the old grave now and again. Oh, they're lovely pieces of funeral furniture, these rests. I found them covered in muck and cobwebs, tucked in the back, so I thought I'd do them up a bit and put them back in here where they belong. Bit of tartan up and they'll be fit for a king to lie on. Not that we've ever had a king buried here at Highgate, but if we had, this is where his coffin would have lain for the consecration, here in the C of E chapel. There's another smaller and less ornate one across the passage for the dissenters, the Methodists, Baptists, Buddhists and all the doubting Thomases, and they're both stood empty and unused for over 50 years now. Here, listen to this. Under these floorboards are the remains of an hydraulic beer. And I don't mean a bottle of IPA left behind by the builder. No, this was a mechanism which must have added a certain macabre touch to the funeral service. As the vicar ended his eulogy, the floor would rumble ominously and then slide open, gaping wide. The lilies on the coffin trembling with unseen vibrations. Slowly and majestically, it descended into the depths below, the void closing shut with a hiss. You see, when Highgate first opened on the 26th of May 1839, the cemetery was half the size it is now. But it became such a popular place that the London Cemetery Company realised they were onto a winner and expanded the operation, opening the new, or east side, across the road, in 1854. But that posed a new problem in itself. After the funeral service, the coffins couldn't very well be carted across Swain's Lane, which separates the two parts of the cemetery. So, the company's architect, Stephen Geary, devised an hydraulic system which lowered the caskets to the basement, where they were loaded onto a bogie and trundled through a tunnel under the road to the other side. You can still see the exit by the tomb of William Freeze Green, the inventor of kinematography. There's quite a lot of famous people buried over there on the east side. George Eliot, the writer who gave us Middlemarch, Sir Albert Barrett, the man who gave us Licorice All Sorts, and of course the most visited grave of them all, Karl Marx, the man who tried to give us all communism. He's is probably the most bombed corpse as well. Twice now somebody's tried to blow him away. The tomb's been so fortified over the years that I know where I'm heading when they drop the bomb. There's also the empty tomb of Eliza Barrow. Eliza who, you're probably thinking? Ah, well, her empty grave figured in a most famous murder case, and one which earned the title for its villain, the meanest murderer of them all. Pull up a pew, and I'll tell you the tale my granddad told to me. The summer of 1909 was unusually hot, and on the 25th of July, the warmest day of the year, in North London, Eliza Barrow, a 49-year-old spinster, had moved from the cramped confines of her cousin Frank Vonderes's house into a new abode around the corner. The four-room, top-floor flat in Tollington Park, London, N4.
Do be careful with that dresser. It's a family piece. You damage that and there'll be hell to pay.
Oh, Miss Barrow, good day to you. Welcome, welcome indeed. Everything going smoothly?
Good day, Mr. Seddon. I wish I could say so. These removal men are so clumsy.
If that's my china, I shall expect recompense for damage.
Oh, dear me, that sounded valuable. Forgive me for saying so, Miss Barrow, but I think you should have taken out an insurance policy.
Insurance, Mr. Seddon? I don't believe in insurance. It's a complete and utter waste of money.
Unless, of course, you lose some treasured item.
Perhaps I might pop up later and tell you of the bonuses which the company I represent offers. I'm sure you will find them beneficial.
Frederick Seddon was Miss Barrow's new landlord and lived on the ground floor of the house with his wife Maggie, 5 children, elderly father and 1 servant. A local sales manager for the London and Manchester Assurance Company, Seddon's consuming passion in life was money. He loved the feel of it, the very smell of it, and would sit for hours in his small office at the rear of the house, for which he charged the London and Manchester 5 shillings a week, counting and recounting the day's takings. When he'd worked out his percentage, he'd add it to the small pile of savings which he kept securely locked in the stout safe. True to his word, that evening he paid Miss Barrow a visit and quickly calculated her assets.
Dear me. Dear me.
Have you found something amiss, Mr. Seddon?
Frederick, please. Yes, I have, Eliza. I hope I may call you Eliza, Miss Barrow. After all, we are the closest of neighbours.
Why, yes, of course. Frederick, what problem do you see with my capital?
Well, for instance, this £1,600 nominal stock with the Indian government. A very dubious investment, what with the riots in Calcutta and the falling price of tea on the world market. Then the leases on the Buck's Head public house in Camden and the barber shop next door. Lloyd George is not the imbiber's friend, Eliza. I've heard talk that he and his damnable Liberal government, excuse my language, intend to increase the tax on alcohol while shortening licensing hours.
No, that would ruin me.
Quite. Look, my dear, why don't you leave it with me? I'm sure I could reinvest some of your stock and vastly improve your security and your peace of mind in the bargain.
Miss Barrow, her mind in a whirl of confusion, beset with terrifying thoughts of rebelling turbaned ruffians and even worse, a sober London, signed over the India stock to Seddon for his verbal promise of an annuity of £108 a year for life. He promptly sold the stock, making a slight profit in the bargain, and reinvested the sum on the leaseholds of 14 tenement houses in the East End of London, which guaranteed a return of over £200 a year. Now, you would have thought that Miss Barrow should have twigged that something odd was going on, but on the contrary, she revelled in the attention Seddon paid her.
August the 5th, 1909. Dear Maud, the weather being so pleasant, I've taken to a shady bench in nearby Finsbury Park. My new home is a delight after my unpleasant stay with Cousin Frank and his family, all of whom made it patently obvious that they found me difficult to live with. I know my ill health can be tedious to bystanders, but surely that is not what family should be. Cousin Frank even went so far to mention one day that I looked scruffy.
Mr. Frederick Seddon, my new landlord and friend, is quite the opposite, a paragon of virtuous manners and, a rare commodity these days, an honest and trustworthy gentleman. My chest is still proving a trifle gip-worthy, but Mr. Seddon's wife, Maggie, suggested I try an inhaler with a new balsam mix of amber.
Yes, a bit of wax polish and some elbow grease, and these coffin stands are coming up a treat. English oak, you can't beat it.
Do you know, there are two types of oak trees native to Britain, the sessile and the pedunculate. And you can always spot the difference, because on the pedunculate, the acorns hang down on little stalks, like little pendulums. Whereas on the sessile, the acorns don't have any stalks at all. There's a little piece of useless information for you. Oh, but the story. The hot summer gave way to a wet autumn and cold winter, Father Christmas leaving snow in his wake. By the new year of 1911, Miss Barrow had transferred the ownership of both the pub and the barbers to Seddon in return for another lifelong annuity of £52. Frederick further persuaded Eliza to withdraw the entire £216 in her account with the City of London Bank.
There. You can sleep safe in your bed, Eliza, in the knowledge that your savings are truly safeguarded.
Thank you, Frederick. Without your kind guidance, I would never have realised that banks were such a precarious place to hold one's savings.
I wouldn't trust them with a farthing of my money, Eliza.
Are you sure it was necessary to change the notes for gold? What if some villain should break in here?
Do not worry one jot, my dear. Your monies are as safe here as the crown jewels in the tower. As for the gold, the value of the pound has been fluctuating somewhat violently on the world markets recently. Believe me, it'll be more circumspect in the long term to keep your hard-earned wherewithal in sovereigns.
Oh, I do believe you, Frederick, and thank you most sincerely for your concern. That £216 was never seen again. As the year went by, Seddon became less than a little happy with his financial arrangements with Miss Barrow. Her annuities, paid on a weekly basis, ate into the household expenses and would continue to do so till the day she died. At the beginning of another scorching August, Miss Barrow, to escape London's soaring temperatures, took a week's holiday at Southend, accompanied by Seddon's wife, Maggie, with whom she had a blossoming friendship. The day before Miss Barrow and Maggie Seddon's return to London, Frederick sent his eldest daughter to the chemist at 27 Crouch Hill on an important errand.
Why, hello there. You're one of the Seddon children, unless my old eyes deceive me. No, don't tell me, let me guess. You can't be Ada, you're too tall, and you definitely can't be Lily, she's not out of her perambulator yet, unless I'm mistaken.
I'm Margaret, Mr. Thorley.
Ah, Margaret, of course. Well, young lady, what can I get for you today?
My father wants a packet of fly paper, please, and ask you put it to Miss Barrow's account.
Fly paper. Ah, here we are. One packet of six. Tell Mr. Seddon that's sixpence halfpenny to Miss Barrow's account. Oh, and be sure to wash your hands when you get home, and tell your father to read the instructions closely. That fly paper's coated in arsenic.
A few days afterwards, Miss Barrow fell violently ill with constant diarrhoea and vomiting. The hastily summoned doctor, discovering that Eliza had eaten a quantity of cockles, winkles and whelks on her holiday, diagnosed epidemic diarrhoea, prescribing bed rest and suitable medicine. He also advised the Seddons to hang sheets soaked in carbolic in order to mask the dreadful smell of the sick room. They, however, went one step further.
I'm so sorry to have caused any trouble, Frederick. I don't know what's come over me. I feel so tired.
Now don't you worry yourself for one minute, Eliza. I'm only sorry we have to hang these papers. It's the heat which brings out these flies, and they're naturally attracted to the infirmed. The sooner you're better, the sooner we can all get back to normal, eh? Maggie, go down and make Eliza a nice cup of tea, will you, dear?
Thank you both. You're so very kind to me. May I ask another small favour, Frederick? Will you take care of my business matters while I'm poorly?
Of course, my dear Eliza. It'll be a pleasure. I'll make sure to take care of every little thing. And he did. The doctor called every day for the next week, and Miss Barrow's health seemed to steadily improve. Until the evening of the 11th of September, when suddenly she took an unexpected turn for the worse.
Now, come on, come on. This can't go on, Eliza. Mrs. Seddon and I have been up and down these stairs all night. You must go to sleep.
I feel so ill. So very, very ill.
Here, see if you can't manage some tea. It'll help you to get off.
I'm so sorry to be a burden, Frederick.
There you are. Just drink your tea, Eliza, dear.
By first light of dawn, Eliza Barrow was dead. That very morning, Seddon went to the undertakers and, telling them that an old lady had died impoverished with just £4 to her name, arranged a cheap funeral for £3.09.6, pocketing the difference as commission. Miss Barrow was buried in a pauper's grave at Islington Cemetery 2 days later. All this might have gone unnoticed had not Eliza's cousin Frank been reading the Islington Gazette a few weeks later and happened to peruse the burial notices. Straight away, he contacted the police, explaining that he hadn't been informed of his cousin's death and questioning, as the family maintained a vault at Highgate Cemetery, why Eliza was buried in a pauper's grave in Islington. The police smelled a rat, ordered an exhumation and discovered that Eliza's body contained lethal amounts of arsenic. Seddon was arrested in the street outside his house on the 4th of December.
Excuse me, sir, are you Mr. Frederick Seddon of number 63 Torrington Park?
Yes, that is I. Is there some problem, officer?
Mr. Seddon, I am arresting you for the murder of one Eliza Mary Barrow by means of arsenic
poisoning.
What on
earth are you saying? This is a terrible charge. Murder? I'm the first of our family that has ever been accused of such a crime.
Will you come along quietly, sir?
Are you going to arrest my wife too? You're sure it was arsenic? There was Sanitas in her room, you know. Perhaps she died from that, although I never knew it was a poison.
Maggie Seddon was arrested too, just over a month later, and they were both brought to trial at the Old Bailey on the 4th of March.
All stand for His Honour, Justice Bucknell.
The main question to be answered was how the arsenic, over 5 grains of the poison, enough to kill an ox, had found its way into Miss Barrow's body. Seddon's defence lawyer, the formidable and expensive Marshall Hall, outlined the fact that flypaper had been hung around Eliza's sick room suspended over saucers of water, and, therefore, it was easy to suppose that she, at some time during her illness, had drunk from one or more of the saucers and swallowed arsenic-contaminated flies. But the prosecution, conducted by the Attorney General Sir Rufus Isaacs, had carried out a series of tests that proved beyond doubt that only the boiling or soaking of the flypaper released a lethal dose. One paper, prepared thus, was enough to kill, and Seddon, through his daughter, had purchased a packet.
One packet of six, that is correct. But I never knew that it was possible to extract the poison in this manner until I heard it had been done by experiment. We, that is my wife, Margaret, and I, did administer bismuth to Miss Barrow to help with her diarrhoea, and that is known to contain arsenic, my lord.
Evidence suggested that Miss Barrow would have had to have consumed 200 weight of bismuth to obtain the saturation of arsenic found in her organs and tissues. The jury retired to consider their verdict on the afternoon of the 14th of March, 10 days after the trial had commenced. They found Frederick Seddon, the meanest murderer of them all, guilty of murder. But surprisingly, returned a verdict of not guilty on his wife, Maggie.
Frederick Henry Seddon, it is the verdict of this court that you be taken to a place of execution and there hanged by the neck until you are dead. Take him down.
No, it's a dreadful mistake. I'm no poisoner. You can't do this. Take your hands off me. I'm not a degenerate. I'm a respectable man, damn you. No, no, no!
There we are, back in place and good as new. It's sad to think that Miss Barrow's coffin never did lie on these coffin rests. Her cousins, who by the by inherited her entire estate, refused to pay for her reburial here at Highgate, and she was put back into the pauper's grave. Her tomb is empty to this day.
Gotcha!
Arsenic flypaper, eh? It didn't cause holes in the ozone there, but I think we're better off without it.
Well, I'd better get back to my business.
There's a coachload of mediums due this afternoon coming to pay their respects at the grave of Georgina Horton, the founder member of the Spiritualist Association. Let's hope they've left their skills at home, otherwise with the other 51,000 graves here, they'll all be short-circuiting. Pop by again soon, why don't you? And I'll tell you more about Highgate Cemetery and another extraordinary sexton's tale.
The Sexton's Tales was written and narrated by Emlyn Glanmore Harris. The original music score was composed by the author. The series was produced by Dead Interesting Productions.